Five, four, three, two, one. You are listening to the Mango Tea Podcast with Jody and DK.
We are a nonpartisan Jamaican and Caribbean podcast for the diaspora. We give you tea with a slice of mango and information on current events, politics and politics, finance, sports, and culture. We created this podcast for the diaspora to know what's happening in the Caribbean beyond the gossip.
Everyone, welcome to a new episode of Mango Tea Podcast. Today we have an illustrious guest because we give you nothing but illustrious guests always from the Caribbean, across the diaspora, from around the world. We have Ashley from Feminit Trinidad with us today. Feminit is an intersectional Caribbean feminist non-governmental organization that seeks to advance gender equality in the Caribbean through social good, conversation, and education. Intersectional feminism recognizes that the issues faced by women are not related only to their gender, but also to their class, race, social, educational, and socioeconomic standing, and especially for a region like the Caribbean with so many complexities, this organization is perfect. So Ashley, welcome to Mango Tea Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Definitely.
So like a really tough question for you out the gate. What's your favorite mango?
Julie mango.
Ooh.
Yes. A cool
she
Julie mango.
She said it without even thinking.
Cool Julie mango. Why cold?
Why?
Wait, you don't have a cold?
No.
No, because I feel like you just pick it off the tree. So you have it whatever temperature
pick it off the tree. And then put it in the fridge, and then you just cut the faces off, and you suck it, and then you suck the rest of the mango. This is the best. Listen, it brings out everything.
Wow, I've never had a cold Julie mango. Actually, funny enough, I don't like fruits that are cold. I'd have grapes cold or starburst, but not a Julie mango. Ooh.
Yeah, try
you
it.
You put salt and black pepper on your Julie mango?
No, just like that.
I'm just asking just to make
you
sure.
Do you ever eat a green Julie mango?
Yeah, that one I would put a little bit of salt, a little bit of black pepper on it.
See, yeah.
Okay. That's really good.
So Ashley, you're based in Trinidad, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Feminit, when did you start it and why did you decide to start it?
Right. So the birth of Feminit was February 8th last year. And, you know, like I have an NGO background since 2014. I've been involved in NGO work and it's, the focus was on youth development and, you know, mixing arts and activism. But within the feminist space, I realized that there was some sort of lack when it came to like actually educating persons on issues and not assuming that they already know stuff and also a space that was accessible, that used language that I don't have to Google every second, that was, you know, inclusive and actually intersectional, not in the buzzword kind of vibe, but really thought about, you know, intersectionality. And so initially, Feminine is actually going to be a podcast to talk about like issues through a Caribbean feminist lens. Mm-hmm. And then I was talking to my partner because, I mean, I get a lot of ideas, and some of them never really follow through, but Feminit stuck, thank the universe. And so like we started to brainstorm, okay, what can Feminit be? What does the logo look like? And then everything just took off from then. And now we're like, we're a year and a couple weeks old.
Oh my gosh, congrats, happy birthday.
That's right.
Thank you. We're cousins, like, cause we started January last year and yeah, I'm also like a scatterbrain, literally all over the place. Zakari had to sit me down one day and be like, you need to start something. You need to do that.
Yeah,
it took me 4 years to do the podcast. Sit down and like do it. Like the idea was always there, but my head, there's like 15 million things happening per second.
So I feel you.
We're cousins already. Look at that.
We are. I did want to ask one question, because I know that when it comes down to Black women compared to white women, it might seem controversial, but I feel like the definition of being a feminist always seems to differ when it comes down to white women compared, obviously, to Black women, because of obviously our history, our struggle, or past or present. Do you think if you would define a feminist in terms of a Caribbean woman, what would you say a feminist was or is?
Right. Well, to me, feminism, and even like from readings of like Professor Muhammad and stuff, it's Caribbean feminism is homegrown. And so there's a one central thought to feminism, which is, to me, I think all feminism, any kind of brand or branch of feminism, should be intersectional, because you can't want to achieve like equality and equity without understanding how different identities intersect. And so in a case like that, with regards to the Caribbean, it's really understanding the way that the histories differ and seeing how the challenges really show themselves. So, for example, you know, in contrasting to the Western world, Caribbean women have always been working. They literally came here to work. And so on top of working, they had to like take care of the home and even be the breadwinner in some cases, in a lot of cases actually, and then still have to face forms of abuse. And so it's a lot of things that differ from Western feminism. But I think that at the center, there should be like one common thread, which is intersectionality, you know?
Yeah.
Perfect. You know what's interesting too, that you bring up intersectionality and where your organization is located geographically, Trinidad. Trinidad has, I've been observing and learning and asking questions. We've interviewed a tons of Trinis actually, I think. In terms of work, it's like Jamaicans, Trinis.
And Trinis.
Actually,
I've interviewed more Trinis than Jamaicans and more Trinis than anybody else. People will probably think this is a Trini podcast. It is not. It's a Caribbean podcast. But what interests me is Trinidad being that there's a longstanding racial tension on the island between Afro Trinis and Indo Trinis. And then now you have this unique organization where feminism is at the forefront, and you're talking about intersectionality. How does intersectionality with Afrofeminism, how does Afrofeminism differ from Indo-Caribbean feminism? Is there
So we try to like find common ground and also serve the different types of Caribbean entities that exist. Yeah. So, like, actually, our core team is made up of four women. We're all, like, different in terms of, like, we're quite diverse, different backgrounds. There's mixed Trini, me being an Afro-Trini, there's an Indo-Trinidadian woman there, too. And so we have different perspectives. And so our feminism, what we've been able to really foster at Feminit is understanding that thread of intersectionality and understanding, okay, we may not have the same exact experiences when it comes to different types of oppression and inequalities, but we understand how we all experience some type of oppression and then finding ways to really kind of alleviate the issues in that way. And so we found like a common ground and, you know, be able to like branch off from there.
So it's like Carnival being uniting factor.
Yes, it's Carnival. I love that. I really love that.
Good one.
So one of the things we were planning the podcast programming for the year, and you guys were on our list from there. Because I've been following you guys on Twitter for a while, loved your content. And we noticed that you guys were tweeting a lot about femicide. And I was like, it'd be really interesting to have them come on and talk about femicide and across the Caribbean, because that is out of control. Jamaica, out of control. Grenada, out of control.
Out
of control. And I think there was a UN study that came out, I think maybe like 2-3 weeks ago, from the Caribbean UN office talking about domestic violence increase during COVID.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks ago, there was an incident. And we talked about it in the previous episode with Angela Barat, and that whole situation. And it still rocks me to this day.
Yes.
It's still really troubling, being that she's a graduate, she was in her work clothes, just trying to go home, trying to get some it was wild. So yeah. I was wondering, and I within my subsequent research, there I saw that in October of 2020, there was 40 women that were murdered. So can you give us a little history? Well, not a history, but can you tell us about femicide in Trinidad? Like, has it, it's always in a thing, but has it, are we far gone now? Way far gone.
Right. The, so, last day, right? 2020. There's the news, one of the national newspapers called The Guardian. And on their front page were, it was actually filled, I think the front and the back of the newspaper were pictures of each woman that was killed, you know, as a result of either intimate partner violence or, you know. And what was the chilling part of that was that in 2016, that was the same style of the front and back page of the Guardian newspaper. And like my pause, like the raised saying that, because I could see it and remembering that, you know, and so that just goes to show that I was 4 years ago, well, back in 2020, and nothing has changed. Literally nothing has changed.
Because you know
what has changed?
You know what I remember too? I apologize for cutting you off.
Yeah, that's okay.
When we started it, when we started last year, I think one of our first three episodes, we actually talked about domestic violence. I think it was our first
episode.
We actually talked about it. We talked about Trinidad, because I think there was like, within the first 4 days of the year, I think maybe
three,
four or five women were murdered every single day. And I was like, what's going on?
It's happening.
And
so the thing with that is that it's the only thing that has really changed is that they just become really more, like they're more gruesome. And we hear nothing from those in power. So that has been the common thing. It has just gotten worse in terms of response. This year, however, was the first time that we've seen such a nationwide response to anything like that. You know, where there were protests literally in every spot in Trinidad and Tobago. Like even the rural areas, they were on the street marching, holding their vigils, you know. And so the history of femicide in Trinidad, it's something that has always been really brutal, really bloody. And, you know, time and time again, you feel that sense of hopelessness, because when you listen to press conferences, when you listen to people's response to this, it's almost as if they don't care. And then, of course, there's that that thing where they continue to put the blame on women. Like, hey, you need to, like, I don't know, not travel. Because what exactly can you really tell women when they're trying to go home? And so it's been messy. And even like, the kind of culture that we have is quite a victim-blaming culture, where we expect, you know, women to try to fit the mold of what it means to be perfect. And even looking at this case, right, compared to in December when Ashanti Riley was found, right? And there has been a lot of kick up in the media, or like on social media recently too, where folks are trying to say that, you know, like comparing the two situations. And of course, when everything first happened, and someone mentioned the whole idea of race and whatnot, I was like, oh my God, do we really have to do this? But then sitting back and really understanding the kind of culture that we have and how we see Afro-Caribbean women compared to mixed Caribbean women or Indo-Caribbean women, we have to understand the disparity that, that exists there and how, you know, anything that fits outside of an Afro-Caribbean woman fits the perfect victim. Even the way the media, and the media is actually responsible for how they portray stories, how they write their articles, the structure and everything. For Ashanti, I remembered like her mother, and like even reports, like interviewing persons in her family who had to say they know their child did not run away, you know? But for Andrea, they were using, like calling her an angel, like, you know, all these really nice things. And that feeds into the way people see things. It's Andrea was the perfect victim. You see yourself in Andrea, you feel that. And so I think that contributes a lot to how the nationwide response was. Even politicians at her vigil made it very political, of course, but they were calling her princess, you know, and it was really weird because, first of all, Andrea was 23 years old, but they kept calling her a child. She's a grown woman. Yeah. It was weird because also Ashanti was 18.
Yeah.
Still in secondary school, no one called her a princess. So you can see the difference in the response from the media and then, of course, from wider Trinidad and Tobago.
It's funny that you mentioned that, too, because I know that we talked about in our episode that Stuart Young, the Minister of National Security, he had made a few statements about the murder. And he had proposed, immediately said, something needs to be done. And they brought up the CCTVs and the fact that taxpayers' monies was going to waste because half of them weren't working. But he also proposed legislation to allow pepper spray. What do you think about, is that a load of shit?
Yeah, because, and here's what makes it also even like shittier. The fact that you need a permit. Now, here's the thing, Trinidad, yeah, you need a permit for it, right? It's like apply. Now, here's the thing, Trinidad takes forever. When I tell you forever, forever to do like normal things, right? Can you imagine? As a woman having to go through the entire process, and plus they're going to probably send you through a million persons before you could get to find out where you could find the form. So, and as a whole other thing to wait for the form to be approved. And so the thing is, and the responses have been quite reactionary. I think they're just trying to say, hey, you all here, tell all the activists, okay, fine, take your pepper spray and go. But they're not looking at the root and to see, let's see how we could actually, make things actually like work and make sense. Because when you even think about CCTV cameras, right, they only look at what's happening at the time. So let's see, you probably get kidnapped in a car, and so what happens when you get into the, like, what happened, like, how is that even, you know? And so it's mess.
Wait,
I think that was my issue with it too. Like, I feel like the measures that are being put in place are measures that are they're throwing out at people. They're more after what happened after the case, or not after. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, let's try to figure our stuff out, but it's like, okay, let's throw the cameras in, but nobody's telling me how can I prevent this from happening?
Exactly.
Or how about we talk to the men? It's almost, and I think we had a discussion before on the previous episode, and we were talking about how the conversation, a lot of the conversation is directed towards the women. Like, how can we help you prevent this? As if to say it is almost their fault. Like, okay, let's give you a pepper spray. Let's tell you to, maybe your skirt was a little bit too short that day. Or maybe, you know, your children are home. Why is it 9 o'clock and why are you not home? Let's find ways to help prevent the man from maybe killing you or raping you. And I feel like the Caribbean itself, I feel like we need to start having the conversations.
Yeah.
A lot of the conversations with the men, so with our young men, and telling them, okay, this is what you should not do. The woman, your girlfriend or your sister or your aunt has as much and every right as you have. And I feel like that's where we need to go in the Caribbean. Like, let's start having a conversation with men, because at the end of the day, it's their problem. It's just like to me with racism. It's like, okay, are we going to always be talking to black people about racism or what we can do to help them? Who the issue lies with white folks. I feel like it is now time, and we're celebrating Women's History Month. And I feel like, as a guy, I've always said it's important to start having conversations with men about how we can prevent things like this. We're not trying to worry about, because we're not trying to worry about what happens after the girl dies.
Yeah.
All about we try to prevent it. And then when I think of the Caribbean also, I'm realizing also that even with all the cameras and even with everything that they have, what is being done after? So we know that the guy that murdered and killed Andrea, we learned of his history and we understand, okay, so he had a past history. We understand everything that he did prior to the situation. Mm-hmm. But then why is it that he was still allowed to be outside and out in the street? So even when we have situations where there's a camera, nothing is being done. So you tell a young woman, okay, I'm here to protect you. But then when situations arise like this, they're like, okay, but you said you're going to protect me, but here's the guy that touched me last week. And he's out in the street. So I feel like the conversation's got to, we've got to really escalate the conversation to protect our young girls, to protect our daughters, our sisters, our friends. And it just definitely has to, it has, and that's why an organization like yours is so important, because we have to like get the information out there so people can know, you know what, this is, it's almost like we're in a state of emergency.
We are,
issues like this.
Yeah, it's an epidemic. Because like even looking throughout the world, I mean, Puerto Rico actually declared a state of emergency because of gender-based violence, because of the increased rates of gender-based violence. And I mean, the pandemic has definitely increased those levels, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a really difficult thing, because when you think about even like the protocols, and I know this is done to kind of curb the spread of the COVID-19, mm-hmm. but a lot of women are stuck at home with their abusers, and there isn't really much that can be done. There was recently one of the members in our team was telling us, because folks actually reach out to us who are going through stuff or who know someone who's going through stuff for advice and to really get guidance as to what to do. And one of them, they were telling us that they went to the police station to report, and a woman officer was asking, like, you horn him? Like, what you do? You know, like,
wow.
That's the reason why he hit you, because there's no other reason that a man will be abusive, right? Or your partner will be abusive. Like, you had to provoke them. Mm. And it's almost as if there's no trust in the police service, because, and a lot of things go underreported too, because you have to now wonder, am I going to re-traumatize myself for the sake of nothing? Because I'm going to go pour out my heart and my story for people who aren't even going to take it seriously, who are going to ask me really difficult questions to make me feel like nothing and like trash and like I deserved what I experienced.
Yeah.
And so even that, it's mess. And there's actually a report I read yesterday that was really heartbreaking. And it was about a mother who was speaking of relative who raped her child, right? And she said, you know, she reported it to the police and nothing has been done. Like, they were supposed to medically examine the child to, like, you know, do the whole forensic stuff to see. And it's still waiting. The day when they had to do it, the officers just called and canceled. And so imagine, like, where do you go in a case like this? What do you do in a case like this?
So I know your organization does a lot of education. What type of education have you done to the Trinidad and Tobago public? That's fine.
Right. So far, everything is online. We're currently actually developing a curriculum. And we're really, getting into schools is a task to start from, like, form one, like the as you enter high school and even in primary school. So we're developing a curriculum right now around gender-based violence to teach like the basics, mm-hmm. To understand first of all what is gender-based violence and how little acts can contribute to the wider issue. And so everything so far has been online. We've created little media kits to send out to folks in different organizations who do that kind of work, but who also don't center their work on that, but have people in their audience who wants to understand and stuff like that. So everything has been online. And so the next step is for us to get that curriculum out there and then to probably go into like communities. And even if it's 10 at a time, because with our COVID protocols, you can't have gatherings that are more than 10, which poses a really big, like, you know, a damper on things. And so that's the next step.
Y'all should have a fed. Everybody will be out.
What we do?
Listen, get Patrice. Get Patrice do a song. Get Nadia do a song. If you get Masha, perfect. So Trinidad recently had an election in September, August. And that was a mess.
Yeah.
Right? I personally love mess, so it was very interesting to me. Was there anything that came? Was there any conversations about gender-based violence that came up about that? Came around?
It was more around, well, yes, but not in the sense of like the traditional types that people can easily identify. And it's a thing that runs through almost every election here in the Caribbean and that I witnessed like elsewhere, which is, you know, violence against women in politics. And so what has happened is a lot of male politicians who would like try to use different types of like sexual insults, at least, or degrading women in a way that say, you live this kind of life, so you aren't fit to run. But there's also the side of that where trans folks experience like a lot of discrimination. So in one of the parties, this was really disgusting because people were laughing at it, but it was disgusting. The party that's currently in power, I think it was like two of their members of parliament were on their political platform and referred to the opposition, one of their team members are saying, in their speech, they were like, you know, put a real woman to lead now. But the person who's on the opposition side is a man, is either a man or a trans woman. It's either a man who they believe to be feminine or a trans woman. I can't remember the exact person. And they said that. And there are people who were like laughing at it and stuff like that. Yeah. But I mean, in Trinidad and Tobago, we don't really have laws that are put in place to protect persons of the LGBTQIA community. And even when it comes to discrimination, it exists, but there isn't much that you can do. And so if you have your leaders on a political platform saying things like this, what do you expect of the citizens? You know? And so the thread runs through everything, the elections, it was awful. I don't think I've probably been conscious in the past years to witness if it was actually bad like this, or if this last day was actually worse, but it was awful. It was so awful.
We've heard a lot. We actually, before Trinidad's election, we interviewed a criminologist from UWE, and we were having trouble with the audio, and he emailed me. He's like, where is the episode? You need to post it now. Did you see the elections? Did you see how racist it was? Did you see how terrible it was? Like, I did. I'm sorry, I'm working on this, but like, tell me more. And like, yeah. I have some of my Trini friends. They were, they know I have the podcast. They know I love to talk. They know I like Trinidad. And they were like, you need to talk about this on your podcast. And they were sending me posts, just post upon post upon post about the levels of racism. So I can just imagine the intersectionality of when it got so granular. And especially for Caribbean people, we're getting there, but we're not there yet in terms
We're far away.
I didn't even think we're close to being like,
we're barely even trying.
I have another question too. I know that for International Women's Day, your group is going to be a part of a march on March 8th. To where you're going to be doing a walkout, and you're eventually going to convene at Red House. And one of the things that you guys are advocating for is some action to the National Strategic Action Plan to end gender-based violence. And this was proposed in 2016. We're in 2021. What happened? Why
nothing? Conversation. Nothing is what happened. I feel like there's so many times that things have been delivered. I remember Kaiso leading an action to have like this petition signed, like hand signed, as in several gatherings where people literally sign and put their information. They hand delivered it, you know, to the Attorney General, and nothing. There were 60 mans, I think it was probably 2018 that they delivered, or 2019, and only one of the suggestions were made, and that's not even like, it wasn't even like thoroughly. It was amendments to the Domestic Violence Act. And they didn't even do it in its entirety in terms of, you know, the entire suggestion that was taken. But we get a lot of lip service from those in power, and so we don't even have a national gender policy. It's still a green paper, right? It's been years. And because you know what's also embarrassing? I was on UN's page and looking at, you know, like the status of different countries when it comes to achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, and even seeing the status of how things are progressing. And for a lot of things, like, you know, gender policy, gender-based violence policy, you just, like, see, no, that we don't have it. And I don't even think, I don't know if we're even working towards it. It's like they don't even listen to us. And it's weird because time and time again, organizations prove and give, you know, the hard copy evidence, the hard evidence that, hey, you need this. I mean, even just look, if you just listen to the news, to anything, you realize that, hey, we actually need this. But I think the politicians are very disconnected to the people. Because when you listen to how they address issues and how, you know, very distant they are from just being human.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a mess.
Oh my God.
It's a mess.
One question. The Caribbean has always been patriarchal in our mindset. I think we've always been that way, and I feel like we're still that way. Even to this day, do you get a little pushback from women with regards to the movement or with regards to what you're doing? Because I always, for me, I've always heard tidbits. It's like even from women, maybe women in church or women who are more traditional in their mindset when it comes on to issues with regards to men and domestic violence and how we treat women and equality mm-hmm. within the home. So have you realized a pushback from the women themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot. There's two types, like I guess I can narrow it down into like two types of pushback that really happens. It's one, older feminists who believe that they own the space, and so younger feminists need to not and just stay out and not try to do anything. And so that pushback exists there. But then there's the other side of it where women kind of act as agents of the patriarchy. And so a lot of things where you say women don't have to dress a particular way to be respected. They're like, what? No, you need to dress like a queen. What does that even mean? What does that mean, right?
Yeah.
And then also looking at them, how they justify that whole idea of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, so we're two different species and we could never understand each other. Men can't be emotional and women have to be submissive thing. And first of all, caring and having respect for persons is human. It's not about it's a man thing or a woman thing.
We've had a great conversation. So I have another question for you. What's your favorite tea?
Peppermint.
Do you like it a tea bag or like a bush tea?
Tea bag,
okay.
I don't even think I've tried the bush tea. Now that sounds like something I will do with like mint leaves.
Yeah, wait, you never had bush tea?
I had bush tea, but not the peppermint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had bush tea.
Okay. All right. So I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You have been a blessing. I have learned a lot. Dakari's learned a lot. And our listeners will definitely learn a lot. If I'm in the diaspora, I'm in Brooklyn. How can I help feminine on the ground?
Right. So that's actually something we're trying to like, because we had our retreat last weekend, trying to brainstorm, because a lot of people who aren't in Trinidad have been reaching out because they really want to, you know, do stuff. And so we need to like kind of brainstorm a more tangible way rather than just share a post. Like, how can you all actually get, like, you know, get your hands dirty and be a part of that? And so by the end of this week, hopefully we will have a more tangible plan rather than share a post, you know, for everyone to get involved.
We are right here to support because we believe in the empowerment of Afro women, mixed women, all women, trans women, and binary women, all women.
Oh,
love that. Love that.
Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
We hope that as cousins, we'll become more cousinly.
Yes, have a good one.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Mango Tea Podcast and, of course, sipping tea with us. Like this episode, download, and most importantly, share. Follow us on all social media at Mango Tea Podcast. And of course, don't forget your mango.